It's your time to Ed Up with America's leading higher education podcast network, the Ed Up Experience, where we make education your business. This is Ed Up Legal with your host, Patty Roberts. She's Dean at St. Mary's School of Law, and she's going to be leading conversations about legal education in today's world. Now let's hear from your host, Patty Roberts.
Welcome to Ed Up Legal. I'm Patty Roberts, speaking to you from St. Mary's University School of Law. And today's guest is Carla D. Pratt. She is finishing her last semester as Dean and Professor of Law at Washburn University School of Law, a position she has held since 2018. And we'll talk a little bit about her transition to a new position once she leaves the deanship. But first, I'd love to ask, why, after spending so many years at Penn State, did you decide to go to Washburn to be the dean in the first place?
Well, thank you, Dean Roberts, for having me today. My decision to join Washburn really was rooted in the history of the university. So I had the privilege of working with a Washburn alum, Yolanda Ingram, at Penn State as our dean of students. And she emailed me and said, my law school is looking for a dean and I think you would be perfect. Let's talk. And at the time, my son had just started college at Penn State. And as a faculty member, I got a nice discount on his tuition. And so I wasn't looking to leave. But when she told me about the history of Washburn, that it was founded after the Civil War to celebrate the end of slavery and to educate all people, including the recently freed slaves, I was really intrigued by that history. And then when I learned that the law school had actually educated the African-American lawyers who filed the case in federal district court of Brown versus Board of Education, I was even more impressed with the history of the school and its commitment to inclusion. And I was someone who had been really dedicated to education equity throughout my time in higher education and legal education in particular. So the history of Washburn really spoke to me.
Not only such a fantastic history, but what a legacy to have trained the attorneys who argued that case. Really wonderful. So you came to Washburn, and did your son stay at Penn State? I'm curious.
He did. He stayed there and graduated.
Oh, good. I'm glad. And when you joined Washburn, tell us a little bit about that transition. And I know that you've done some cool things there. So I'd love to have you share with our listeners some of the accomplishments you're most proud of at Washburn.
So when I arrived in the summer of 2018, a little while after my arrival, the American Bar Association's Council on Legal Education change the standards governing law schools to allow law schools to deliver up to one third of the JD degree through distance education. And that change was huge. It allowed us to think about ways to innovate. And one of the things I quickly thought about was this would allow us to have students out of residence for the entire final year of law school. And why that made sense to me was students for generations before I went to law school had always been told you need to attend law school in the state where you intend to practice law. And for me as a dean, I thought that was really myopic advice. And I wanted to disrupt that model where students felt like they had to go to law school in the state where they thought they would practice law for a couple of reasons. One, you don't know where life is going to take you. You don't know what state you're going to end up in necessarily. And two, I really wanted students to be able to choose a really good education at a really good value, because we had been reading for years about students saddled with hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt after graduating from law school. And as someone who came from poverty, that really concerned me that students would be graduating with that much debt. I mean, that's a mortgage with no house to live in.
Right.
And so I really wanted to give students the opportunity to choose an outstanding education at a great value without regard to where the law school was located. So I proposed to the Washburn Law faculty that we allow students to do their third year of law school wherever it is that they intend to live and practice law after they graduate and pass the bar exam. By positioning the student in that local legal market sooner, we help the student interview for a job. So we know that employers are more likely to interview a student who has a local address than a student who has an out-of-state address.
That's true, yes.
Yeah, we also wanted to position them in that local legal market so that they could get some experience doing the kind of law that they hope to practice after they graduate. So part of the third year anywhere is an externship where the student is learning to practice law under the supervision of a licensed lawyer. And the ABA rules had been changed to allow students to be paid for this work while they are also earning academic credit. And that was a really good change because students who do third year anywhere and choose an opportunity where they're being paid can reduce the amount of money that they have to borrow for their education. So the other thing that being in the externship does is it provides them with a licensed lawyer in that local legal market who can serve as a reference for them and say, yes, student A is doing great work for me right now. I highly recommend the student to you. And we know that a recommendation from a lawyer in the local legal market is more valuable than a recommendation from one of our faculty members in Topeka, Kansas. So we really wanted to position the student in that local market, get them in a position where they could get that strong reference from a licensed lawyer in that city or town. And the final thing is we require them to join the local bar association and to network with lawyers in that local community so that lawyers get to know them. And when an opportunity arises, someone might reach out to them and say, hey, I thought of you when I saw this opportunity, you should apply. And that will help them in their job search. So I had the idea, but my faculty really made it come to life. They created the academic rules surrounding the program. And this year is our first year of having an entire year of students in the third year anywhere for the entire year. We did a pilot semester just to make sure that it would run smoothly. But this is our first year of full operation, and the feedback that we're getting from students so far is that it is the highlight of their legal education. They love it. So I think we have served our students well with this new initiative.
Well, I love the idea, and I have so many questions. So how many students in this first year of operation have taken advantage of this? Percentage of your class or number of students?
Yeah, I think it's about 30 students who are in it this year, and they are in 12 different states across the U.S. and the District of Columbia. So we have a lot of diversity in practice areas, in geography, and we are planning to track bar outcomes and employment outcomes for this cohort separately so that we can make sure that they are having as good, if not better, of an experience as our students who are staying in residence their third year.
So, of course, wearing my dean hat, bar passage was an instant question, much like it always is for us when we talk about our upcoming online JD. So you don't know that yet, but did your faculty choose to put some additional training or requirements in place for bar prep? I think as a dean, I would be so excited for my students, but I would worry that then that year they would spend, you know, focus so much on their career that bar preparation would be an afterthought. What are you seeing?
Yes, so our faculty was very attuned to that issue at the outset. And so students are required to take our online bar readiness course if they are enrolled in third year anywhere. So they are actually required to take that course. For our students in residence, it's an elective course.
Okay, great. And are they also, while they're doing this externship anywhere, is that the entirety of their credits that third year, or are they taking other online courses?
So it is not all of their credits. So they earn some credit from the externship, and the externship is accompanied by an online course that we call Law Practice Competencies, and that's a full year course. And that course teaches them the skills that we heard practitioners tell us that they wish young lawyers would have that they don't learn in law school. So because students come to us with such diversity among their educational backgrounds, many students are like I was. I was an English major. I had no accounting class in my undergraduate education. And so I was at a deficiency when it came to being a lawyer because I couldn't read financial statements. And so I had to remedy that deficiency very quickly in order to be a successful lawyer. So we teach students how to read financial statements in law practice competencies. We teach them the soft skills that they will need to interact with clients. We teach them the skills that they are not getting in their doctrinal courses, but we think that they will need to have in order to be a successful lawyer in that companion course to the externship. In addition, there's a menu of online courses that are offered to students that they can take as electives to complete the credits for the degree. Most students will need to take 2 to 3 online courses in addition to the externship each semester in order to earn the credits for the degree.
That sounds like a marvelous kind of apprentice model or apprentice hybrid model for that third year. And I can imagine the students are finding it extraordinarily helpful. Do you anticipate, are you hearing buzz from other students or from students who are applying to the law school that this is going to become even more robust and have significantly more enrollment?
So 74% of our admitted students are expressing interest in third year anywhere. So
wow, out of how many students?
So we typically have a class of about 105 to 110 students each year. So
that's a third right now.
So it's a lot of students expressing interest, but we don't know if that interest is going to carry forward to actually doing the program. So we ask them, you know, at the outset when they're applying to us, if they're interested in it. And then we invite all the 1Ls to come to an interest meeting that's held by one of our deans. And basically they learn about the program and what they would have to do. And students sometimes, you know, they get involved in things in the community in Topeka and they don't want to leave. So for example, we have two students who are serving on the local Human Relations Commission in Topeka. And that's an opportunity that, you know, they didn't want to give up because it's a unique opportunity. Because we're in the state capital, our students have a lot of unique opportunities to learn how to practice or learn how to use their education in law in some context while they're here in Topeka. And so not all of them will want to leave, I think, because of that.
Do you find that the students doing advocacy competitions with the advocacy teams or journal work are probably more likely to stay also?
So we do allow students to be in third year anywhere and still be on the journal. We do limit editor-in-chief to being in residence, but we saw through COVID, we did all of our moot court competitions virtually. So we can accommodate students who want to do moot court. We can accommodate students who want to be on journal, even if they're remote in third year anywhere. But I think you're right that there's this camaraderie that develops among the students, and some students want to continue that in-person education throughout their 3 years of law school.
So you have about a third of your students from that class enrolled now in the third year anywhere. Is there anything that surprised you in the faculty about the implementation?
So COVID surprised us. We were not planning for that. And so we did have to develop what I call our COVID addendum to our externship agreement with lawyers so that our students would know that they were expected to adhere to the COVID requirements of the placement that they were placed in. And so if they were going to a law practice context that required them to be vaccinated and or wear a mask, that we expected them to comply with the requirements of that placement. And we didn't get any pushback from students. They were very respectful of the requirements of each of their placements. And so we didn't have any challenge with that, but it was something that we hadn't planned for initially when we decided to launch Third Year Anywhere.
And is there any obstacle or challenge that has arisen in the implementation of the program that you were not expecting? Again, let me exclude COVID.
Outside of COVID, not yet, but we will survey the students who are in Third Year Anywhere right now. We'll be graduating in May, and we will survey them for their feedback. So if there are things that we learn about their experience that we can enhance the program in some way, we will definitely be looking to do that. But so far, the anecdotal, informal feedback that I've gotten through students has been all positive, and we haven't encountered any challenges. We did think about things like, and we put this in the student advisory materials, we did think about things like, what if you're in a placement and you become the victim of sexual harassment? What do you do? And so we put in the materials for students that they are expected to report anything like that to the faculty member at Washburn who is supervising their externship. So the faculty member can step in and try to mediate any workplace issues like that where a student might be mistreated. But we haven't had that so far, and knock on wood, we're hoping that that never arises. But we wanted to kind of think of all the challenges that might arise and how we would want our students to respond and give us a chance to help them.
And so then my final question, I think the networking and the learning of the competencies while on the job, just outstanding opportunities for those students. Are you finding that employment offers have been more commonplace with this group than other third-year students?
So we tell students going in that the placement is a learning opportunity. It is not a job interview. There's no expectation that the supervising attorney or that placement is going to hire the student at the end of the externship. There's absolutely no expectation of that. It's merely lawyers signing up to be partners with us to educate our students. However, the marketplace does respond in the way that it responds. And so what we have learned is that there are some firms that are coming to us that want to be a part of this Third Year Anywhere enrollment option because they're seeing it as an opportunity to open the door to students who might not be in the top 10% of the class. Right. Because it's a longer period of time for them to observe the student's performance. And the student is told that there's no employment expectation on the back end. So we have had students receive, who are in Third Year Anywhere, receive a job offer this year. And we're thrilled about that, but we will continue to tell them going in that, you know, you should not expect that. You should do your best because you want to represent Washburn well, you want to represent yourself well, and you want to learn as much as possible, and you want to get a good, strong reference from your supervising attorney so you can get that job. But I think employers are starting to see, hey, this could be a way for us to get talent, particularly diverse talent. Students of color and students from low-income backgrounds oftentimes are not at the top of the class because they don't have the resources to devote all of their time to their academic studies. Many of them are trying to work to help put themselves through law school. And so they didn't have the time to devote to studies to be at the top 10% of the class, but they're hardworking, they're great people. And so more and more, I think our law firms are seeing that this could be another vehicle for them to look at students who are not in that top 10% of the class, but who could very well add value to their firm and their bottom line.
Well, that's really exciting. And we'll watch with interest to see what your results are in studying this class and how things go post-graduation. So there are a lot of things that I could ask you about, but it seems like an appropriate time to say you've been a leader nationally in diversity and inclusion, I know that you federal Indian law is one of your specialties, and that prior to being a dean, you served as an associate justice for the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe Supreme Court in Fort Yates, North Dakota. So you've worked in the diversity arena and led in that arena. And now you are going to tentatively return to your home state of Oklahoma to serve as the inaugural Ada Lois Sipuel Fisher Chair in Civil Rights, Race, and Justice in Law at the University of Oklahoma College of Law, pending approval from that state's universities regents. So you are leaving the deanship to be the chair of this inaugural center, and I would love to hear more about that experience, what you hope to accomplish.
So I was truly honored when a faculty member at OU reached out to me and asked me if I would apply for this endowed chair. It's a faculty position, and I wasn't, the things sometimes just happen. You know, I didn't even know that OU had done this fundraising and had successfully endowed this chair until the faculty member reached out to me, and I thought, wow, that's truly an honor. I'm a Howard Law School graduate, and everyone who attends Howard Law School reads about the road to Brown, and Dr. Fisher's case is one of the cases on that road to Brown, where she successfully challenges being excluded from the Oklahoma College of Law because of her race. And, you know, I just got goosebumps when they reached out to me, because it wasn't lost on me that but for her and many like her, I wouldn't be where I am today. And so it was truly an emotional honor for me to even be considered. And then when they offered the opportunity to me, I was ecstatic, and I'm really, really excited about being able to go back home. I haven't lived in Oklahoma since 1984, so it's been a while, but
changed
I still
a
have
bit, probably.
It's changed a lot, yes, but I still have a lot of family there. I still have a lot of friends there, and so it still feels like going home, and I'm really looking forward to having the opportunity to teach students constitutional law and civil rights law, and just be a part of the OU College of Law faculty community, and really looking forward to doing research and writing in this area. I don't have time to do that as a dean. I've so enjoyed my time at Washburn, but I just couldn't let this opportunity pass me by.
Well, that's really exciting. And I know that they are thrilled that you are going to join them. And after being a dean, I imagine having an endowed faculty chair and studying and teaching and writing in the areas that you're passionate about would seem like a vacation of sorts.
You know, being a dean is an all-encompassing job. And so, yes, I'm looking forward to a vacation this summer where I don't have to work during my vacation.
Well, that's great. I would be remiss if I didn't mention that my dad, my late father, is a graduate of OU Law. He went back to OU College of Law at the age of 50.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And he finished in 2.5 years. And, you know, I love his story because he went back, this was 20 years ago. He went back as a non-traditional age student when it wasn't all that popular to do. Mm-hmm. Did the conditional summer program and had a marvelous, exciting, impactful career for 20 years. So OU will always be special to me.
That's amazing. Yes, I always believe that you're never too old to pursue your dreams. So
that's awesome. Exactly right. And it looks like you're pursuing some of your own as you return to the University of Oklahoma. How does it feel to be leaving Washburn when you've been so instrumental in helping them to raise the $33 million for their new building? I mean, is it kind of disappointing to leave before that's finished?
Oh, it is. You know, I did tell them I am coming back for the ribbon cutting because I do want to celebrate this collective effort of raising the money and designing the building. It's going to be, I call it our smart building because it's going to have all of the integrated technology that will allow the faculty to create the top quality online courses that we want to have students learning through, and it will afford them the opportunity to broadcast live classes in Topeka to remote participants in a way that we did during COVID, but in a more sophisticated way than we were able to because we didn't have integrated technology in the building. So really looking forward to seeing it finished. It's up, you can see the structure now, and it's really exciting. And yes, I definitely plan to return to Topeka to celebrate that accomplishment.
Absolutely. So we wrap up the episodes with our guests on EdUp Legal by asking the question, what is your prediction for the evolution of legal education in the coming decade? As you know, we have had a great emphasis on social justice and diversity and inclusion, you know, wanting to diversify the profession, but also legal education. And then, of course, we had the tumult of the pandemic and in a weekend having to become virtual and all of those things. But there are a lot of other things that could be part of the coming decade. And so in either the areas that I mentioned or others, what do you predict the future will be? And if it's different than what you think the future will be in the coming decade, what should it be? How should we change in the academy?
Well, you know, I don't have a crystal ball, so don't hold me to this, but
no, I'm not holding anybody to it, I promise.
But I do think, Dean Roberts, that people like you who are being innovative and thoughtful about how we can do things differently to do them better. I'm really excited to watch and see your online, fully online JD program. I was thrilled to see that emerge because I think you will extend legal education to people who don't have the privilege of uprooting their lives, packing up, and moving to a place where a law school is located. And that's a lot of people. And it's also, I think probably we're going to see it's a lot of people disproportionately who are people of color and lower income people. And yeah, it's really important to me to see more people from those groups in our profession. And so I think and I hope that we will see more law schools follow your lead and make legal education accessible to more students through fully online legal education.
Well, thank you. I do hope that while we might be the first, we will not be the last. And so we're working very hard to make sure that it is successful so that people can expand this model nationally. And I appreciate the comments about our innovation, and I want to just return the favor to you. I mean, I think the third year anywhere is a really innovative idea that I'm going to talk with my team about. It's exciting to offer students different ways to access their legal education. We've been accessing it the same or delivering it the same for so long that whether it's online or it's more skills and apprenticeship kinds of experiences, people learn differently and people have different accessibility opportunities. And so we have to be innovative in order to remain relevant, in order to diversify the profession. So thank you for your innovations.
Thank you.
All right, I'm going to let you get back to your conference and of the National Bar Association, right?
Yes.
And I thank you for being a guest today, and we'll have you back on when you can. You're at the University of Oklahoma and you can tell us about your work there.
That sounds great, Dean Roberts. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
This has been another episode of EdUp Legal with your host, Patty Roberts. EdUp Legal is part of the EdUp Experience podcast network, bringing you the brightest and most influential minds across higher education and beyond. Here at EdUp, we make education your business.